Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Tesla has fired its entire supercharger network team. What is going on? This is episode number 35. It is May 3rd, 2024. I'm Dominic Ioni. I'm here with Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, Kyle Connor from Out of Spec Studios, Tom Malogny from State of Charge YouTube channel, and senior editor at Inside EVs. And what is happening? Kyle, Elon Musk has fired its entire supercharging team. Everyone's been talking about this week. You've done three different videos, podcasts, on the reviews channel, you know, putting some coverage out there. What's happening?
Well, I didn't see the title for this episode. I would have probably said something because it's not the entire supercharging team. It is right. The majority of like people who matter for new installs. The maintenance team is still there. The production line for version 3 and 4, my understanding, is still there. But it is like a lot of people that are involved with installing and contracting new stations. They're all gone. A lot of engineers are gone. But a lot of the like production line workers and maintenance is still there. So yeah, we've done three episodes on Out of Spec about this. The first was when the news broke on the Out of Spec podcast. We had our initial reaction, like, what the heck is going on? We don't understand why, out of the blue and in random email. You know, the rumor was 500 people could be in that region. I don't know the exact number. Could just be let go from perhaps the best functioning, from the outside looking in, team at Tesla. And it is one of the most important teams at Tesla because the entire North American charging standard transition happened because of this team. All of the automakers choosing to go J3400 and gain access to the supercharger network. A lot of that is just kind of out the window at this point. It is maybe the largest shakeup we've seen in the charging industry. So we produced a video on the initial what the heck is going on. I then summarized perhaps everything that had happened in terms of ripple effects throughout the industry. We're hearing utilities, construction workers, automakers cannot get a hold of Tesla. They don't know who to call. And then just yesterday, we intercepted a leaked email from someone at Tesla that was just reaching out to anyone on email lists to say, hey, make yourself known. What do we owe you? You know, please be patient with us. Please be patient with lack of payment. Do not install any more superchargers. It was, if anyone is not broken ground on any new sites, do not start digging, do not start construction. However, if you're already underway in construction, then continue and we'll eventually pay you. So they basically, from the outside looking in, this was a the way the email phrased it, was a sudden and thorough restructuring of the supercharger unit. And they are just trying to figure out what the heck is even going on there and get their bearings. And then I'm sure we'll have some more clarity into the future. Certainly this was not planned. by anyone with you know, who knows what's going on the day to day. I think it's absolutely crazy. I know Tom did a video on this as well, so I'm looking forward to hearing his thoughts. I've shared most of my thoughts in our video, so I'll let you guys talk for the most part, but this is the craziest thing that we've seen in the charging industry since Ford decided to go NACS, and this is crazier, I think.
Right. So the Tesla Supercharger team was headed by Rebecca Tonucci, who'd been there for quite some time. I think at least 2019. Does that sound right, Kyle?
Six and a half years.
And, you know, she was there pushing back sometimes with Elon. And I guess, you know, he had enough. So part of that email that Kyle referenced.
Well, that's just a rumor, I believe. Okay, we don't know that to be true.
Right. So I read that on Bloomberg. So, again, that wasn't anything that came out officially from Tesla, but just that Elon Musk has this hardcore thing at the minute, hardcore reductions. We need to be hardcore, and everyone's got to have a hardcore look at their department. And that email was circulated, which was some managers are getting my hardcore brief and instruction, and some of the senior managers are not doing it enough. And that Bloomberg report suggested that she pushed because he wanted a percentage of people in your team who are excellent star performers and get rid of the rest. And the Bloomberg article suggested that she pushed back and go, no, I've got a team of rock stars here, so I shouldn't lose too many of them. But that was that. So that report that Dom alluded to was the suggestion that she pushed back on, saying, I don't want to go a cut as far and as fast as the emails would suggest.
Right. So the quote from the email that kind of says it, and I'll get to you in just 1 second, Tom. And also for our viewers and listeners, like, please, like, give us some comments, and we want to hear from you on this in this episode. But the quote from the email that kind of summarizes what you're alluding there to, Martin, was, hopefully these actions are making it clear that we need to be absolutely hardcore about headcount and cost reduction. The report said, while some on executive staff are taking this seriously, most are not yet doing so. Well, I think the executives who are still at Tesla are probably taking things pretty seriously and maybe making alternate future plans. I don't know. So, Tom, you have a video out this morning. What's your right off the top take on this?
So, yeah, it seems like this was more of like for Elon to make a point that, like, you know, I'm the boss. I said to make cuts. If you're not going to do them, I'll do them. And, you know, you have that right. Companies have the right to fire whom they want. But you also have to have the responsibility of doing it, well, responsibly, so that it doesn't affect some of your partners, your customers also. I do think employers owe something to their employees to treat them fairly if they've worked for them and given them good labor. But I understand there are times where you need cuts. And so I'm not necessarily saying, you know, Tesla shouldn't cut people if they had a very bad first quarter, you know, report. And if they feel like they need to make cuts, okay, they need to make cuts. It's just the way it was done. The people it's affecting, and Kyle mentioned this in his video, that industry people are reaching out to him. I'm having a ton of industry people reach out to me and asking me, you know, do you have any contacts that are left there? Because we were in the middle of this or that, and now we don't know what to do. And, you know, that's being a really bad partner. And you know, while all these companies are competitors, you know, they are partners to some degree. A lot of behind the scenes, you know, companies give other companies cars so they could tear them down. You know, they work together. The engineers from one company work sometimes with engineers from other company, particularly with charging and so forth. They're kind of all in this together. And Tesla, with this, just made it crystal clear that, you know, we are not a reliable partner. And, you know, you're on your own. And, you know, we're going to do only what suits us. Even if we've made deals with you and we promise to help you see this, you know, when a company gets, there's a reason why everybody doesn't have supercharger access right now, and it's just Ford and Rivian. There's a lot of behind the scenes work. I talk with Ford. I talk with Rivian. Matter of fact, in my interview with Jim Farley, he even mentioned how hard his team worked with the Tesla team for months to make this work and to make it seamless. And so, and Rivian also, when I talked to Wasim, we talked about that in a video. I mean, they said it. I'm not just saying this, how hard they worked with the Tesla team to be able to get their vehicles to have, you know, access and work through their native apps and so forth. Now, all these other companies are kind of left in the lurch. And it's not just the OEMs, their customers, there's other third party suppliers. You know, there's a lot going on with adapters right now, and Tesla had been working with some of the other adapter makers about possibly certifying some other adapters. That's kind of just completely cut off now. And we know Tesla was working on extension cable. Other companies are working on extension cables. They were working with Tesla to get that work and get it all UL safely certified. The whole teams that are working on that are gone now. And these other companies are like, okay, you know, we just poured $30, $40 million into trying to develop something. And now we have no partner, no team to help us see this through. So, I mean, that's what really makes this thing. Nobody's ever going to trust Tesla again. Kyle alluded to the fact that some OEMs now, he said the German OEMs in his video, which is excellent. Watch his video. It's fantastic. Some of them are actually rethinking this and thinking about saying, you know what? Maybe we should just stick with CCS1. We know it. It's reliable. It's there. You know, eventually we'll make equipment that works, you know, and as reliably as NACS. We hope that doesn't happen because NACS is such a better solution. But you know, these companies are burned. They put a lot on the line to deciding to do this, and they are all feeling like they just got, you know, a word that begins with an F, you know, and they did.
It was already tough to trust Tesla to do this, right? Tesla was already the weird child. What do we do, Tesla, with our data if we choose to use the supercharger network? And now this huge change up in the most important division, I would say, to unify the electric charging landscape is gone. To Tom's point, they literally don't know who to call. They do not trust Tesla anymore. And so while NACS may happen, while maybe they'll gain access to the superchargers, I can guarantee you every OEM is now looking at Iona and Electrify America and EVgo and other options to be like, okay, We cannot. The sentiment for the last like 6 months has been, once we all go supercharger network, we'll have this baseline solid network. And to be clear to our audience, the maintenance technicians are still there. Everything that exists today will exist into the future. However, new sites that are under construction will still be completed. There was a new one that came online yesterday. These things are still happening, but we probably won't feel the effects of this from an EV driver for 6 months to 1 year. When a lot of the new sites that were supposed to come in are not coming in, perhaps we'll find other ripple effects from a user driver standpoint. But from an automaker standpoint, it's like the reps from Tesla are gone. Tom said, lost trust. I had a conversation with a German automaker yesterday, both with the German team and the U.S. representatives. And they're like, there's one guy who's like, let's just stick with NACS, guys. Everyone else is like, nah, we're not going to do this. So crazy to me what's happening. Truly crazy.
Right. And Tesla's PR team had said, oh, Tesla doesn't have a PR team because they were fired like years ago. Dissolved.
They do.
Well, they sort of do in the background, but there's no public statement, right? Has Elon even said anything on Twitter? That's like basically Tesla's PR department is Musk's Twitter account, basically.
Yes.
So, Alexa account.
Yes. Let's get into that.
Let's read what he said.
Okay, I don't have it up on screen, but I'm happy to get into his justification, which I would summarize as saying they're going to focus on 100% uptime.
Right.
Which they were already almost there. Like,
yeah.
Well,
Tesla gets criticized for a lot of things. You know, there's, you know, like just like vehicle quality, construction, the new battery program, but the Tesla the supercharger network was this crown jewel, like the one thing that was like super reliable. It did this thing right. It did this thing the best. It was, you know, and I don't know.
Well, let me throw this out,
Dominic.
Is it good that one sec, Kyle? Is it good for us to rely on this one company to be the only reliable, like the beacon of light out there with right. charging in North America. Will this, I don't know, will this event, will this be a good thing down the road? Will it be painful for the next couple of years? It's kind of like, you know, that's how we felt at this point, that that was the only one we can trust. And I don't know, will this give the other companies oxygen, this Iona? There's going to be more NEVI funds out there for the other companies, which Tesla probably should have never qualified for any NEVI funding in the first place. But, you know, I'm trying to spin this and look at it positively and say, will this mean that the other tides will rise and you know, we'll kind of have, it won't be as Tesla's here and everyone's here. You know, is that something that you guys think might happen out of this?
Yes, that is the silver lining. That is potentially a decentralized charging network that is, you know, fair market, open to competition, not a monopoly. This is the potential to come from it. But that already was the potential because right. Iona was already planning on building a huge network. And Electrify America is planning on expanding, which they just released a big thing saying they got to put in a bunch more stations. They got the reliability a lot better. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it's way better than it was a year ago at this point. And now they're like, okay, let's install another round of new big chargers now that we know what we're doing a bit. But Dominic, I think let's just look at the problems with the supercharger network from the outwards looking in. I have a video going up today, 1,000-mile road trip in the Tesla Cybertruck to LA. That's before any of this was announced. And I had multiple issues at superchargers. The thing is, no one knows how to quantify uptime. Does uptime right. mean when you plug in your car, it charges? Does it charge at its maximum? What does uptime, how does that work? And I had issues where superchargers would only give me 2 kilowatt hours and then just shut off and then start back up, give me 4 kilowatt hours, then shut off. I'd switch to another cabinet, complete other cabinet, stall everything, shut off, turn on. I had derating issues. I had handle temperature issues. The supercharger network still cannot support high voltage natively, which, you know, in my opinion, should not qualify them for the NEVI funding, like Tom had alluded to, because NEVI says you need to support anywhere from low, mid 200 volts to mid 900 volts. And they're like, well, we support within that range up to 500. So we should qualify. But you should support all voltages within that range. And so it was just a little, you know, one word in the thing that qualified them for a bunch of money. But it sounds like who knows what's going to happen now. Their policy team that was negotiating a lot of these things, they're gone. And these are relationships that take a long time to rebuild. This is trust, a lot of trust in the industry. I spoke to a few different utilities. When Tesla says, hey, we want to put in a new site, you know, that's a pretty trust-based conversation. The utility will spend millions of dollars in some cases to put a transformer in a site ahead of the expected supercharger install. Well, our local utility could not find anyone at Tesla to call. Yeah. Not anyone. Now, of course, this mass email went out, so they have one dude, but like everyone's going to be calling this one guy, and this is going to be great, not great. And that also means that the utility laid out some serious cash for new sites, putting in new transformers, expecting, you know, that power that they're able to sell one day. And at least Tesla won't be a customer. This is an interesting ripple effect, which is companies like Revel Charging near Tom in New York mm-hmm. are already scooping up some of those sites only 1 or 2 days after that Tesla has done this. New York has at least the rumor is, given Revel access to 4 of those sites that have power, that are ready to rock and roll. We don't know if that's true and confirmed. I can call someone at Revel, but that's an interesting effect. I'm sure we'll see more of that. So it could be a way for other CPOs to fast track installations. And Tesla's always great at choosing the best charging locations, no question. So this is a huge competitive disadvantage for Tesla right now, I would say. And it's a shock to everyone. It makes no sense to me still. I have no idea why this would happen. From a rational standpoint, there's no good side of this, really.
That's the thing, Kyle, from the rational standpoint. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, if Tesla felt like they needed to cut back, even if they needed to cut deep into the charging division, that's their right. That's their strategy. It just the way it was done is so bad for the company and for their partners. That's what really gets me. If Elon went to Rebecca, we don't know what the conversation was, and said, look, you know, I'm giving you 8 months, but you got to cut 10%, you know, and I, you know, do it in or 6 months or whatever, you know, do it in waves, make sure everything's covered. That's how you do it. But, you know, I kind of felt like he said, you know, you got till Friday to cut, you know, 10% of your workforce. And, you know, if this is what happened, and she pushed back a little, and he said, well, you know, I'll show you who's boss. You're all gone and I'll start over fresh. You know, we don't know. That's total speculation, but it's kind of like what it seems like what happened. And what Kyle's talking about, there's four sites in New York City, which is close to me, that are urgently needed for DC fast charging. DC fast charging in New York City is a nightmare. There's so few locations. That's why I went to the new Gravity site, and I was so excited about that, because there's not a lot of real estate. There's not a lot of places that can support them. And if a company comes out with something where we can have underground DC fast chargers that don't take up any space and are high powered, I'm all for it. I actually was supposed to go back and interview them again this week, and I canceled because I had some family issues that somebody was sick. But I want to try to do a deep dive with that company and really figure out, do they have really good tech, or is it smoke and mirrors? So hopefully I'm going to sit down with them really soon and learn a little more about it. But Tesla had four sites in New York City that was supposed to really ease this problem. There's a lot of car sharing in New York with Teslas and so forth. And the few sites that are there are constantly taken up by these car sharing services. Even the Gravity service, that the station that I was at, was all filled with car sharing businesses. So, you know, these four sites Tesla was going to do, and the utility had already spent money on that, and they were already upgrading the sites and everything. And just, you know, the day after these cutoffs, okay, all those four sites, that's it. We're not doing them. So hopefully Rebel and other, I'm sure the other companies are looking at potential sites that Tesla had on their map as coming soon. Those are not coming soon anymore. But if Tesla identified the sites, if I'm working for one of these other networks, I'm looking at all the sites that Tesla were going to put a location in and consider, hey, that might be a site for us, because, you know, the utilities in those areas may have already begun to do the work. So, you know, that's definitely something that I think we could see the other networks getting better, get better locations and getting sites installed quicker than they would have otherwise.
Right. So the door is open for the other networks right now to really step in and, you know, kind of take charge of the conversation, because this could be
the door's been open for them. They've done nothing for 10 years.
True. This is a good point. Right. But, you know, there's like nothing at Tesla. Like how do you hire a new Rebecca Tannucci, the head of the supercharger program, who's going to say, yeah, I'm going to work for Elon?
Well, that's a question that I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer. But just briefly from the outside looking in, who would want to go work there at this point?
Not me. I'm not working. I'm reminded of like an alcoholic, like just like doing some rash on just making decisions from I don't know what kind of perspective. It just this seems like no really good rhyme or reason. But
I think what would be really
the guy that's making $150,000 will go work there for $400,000 a year, you know, and take his chances. That's how they're going to get someone.
Yeah, they'll just pay a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't think Tesla pays a lot of money.
Right. Well, I mean, they're trying to pay Elon a lot of money. So speaking of that, you know, I mean, he's talking about, you know, making cost reductions, and, you know, we have to be lean and mean. But in the meantime, he was trying to get like $50 billion. Like he had this, you know, pay package that recently was canceled retroactively by a judge. And so he's out like billions of dollars, and he's trying to, you know, recoup that. But you know, is this the period in time in Tesla's history where you want to try to pull that kind of value from the company to pay the one guy who's making all these crazy decisions? I don't know. Martin, what's on your mind?
I think that one thing I can tell our audience is, we talk about money and paychecks and things like that. All the people I know in Tesla and have known who've worked for Tesla are so different than the debate that happens outside the company. So this week, I do feel we've had a seismic moment in North America's move to electric transportation. Cleaning up air, getting people in clean green vehicles, right? Elon Musk unfollowed two of the most, let's use his word, hardcore, effectively PR people. These accounts that are posting, you know, every few minutes, normally with the word breaking in caps, right? He unfollowed two guys. And the community went crazy for that and bombarded him until he refollowed them. And that summed up to me the week that we've had. Because who cares who Elon Musk follows on Twitter? Like, so he unfollowed these two accounts, big deal, and now he follows them again, right? You know what? That's what the hardcore Tesla community cared about. Everyone I know in Tesla, charging department or not, doesn't even think like that. They just want to create the best cars. They want to create the best software. They want to create the best experience. They all drive Teslas or at least EVs. I don't know anyone like that within the company who treats it like a sports match, like my team is better than your team. They just want to make great products. And some of them want to make good money by doing that as well. I don't know anyone in the company that are like, we're amazing. All the other car companies are crap. Everyone should be like us. Now, there's elements of, clearly, all different personality types I know are people at Tesla. But they are genuinely invested in making the best products. And they know they get it right more than they get it wrong. Like, they get it. They're like, look at the other car manufacturers. Look at the charging businesses who are getting it wrong. They know they're getting it right at Tesla. And whether that is what gets them out of bed in the morning, I don't know. But I think it's more than a paycheck for so many of these people that got laid off this week. It was a mission and it was their life's work. Many of them have been there a long time and they cared. They genuinely cared. They went not just over and above, working crazy hours, missing their family, working weekends, getting these charges in the ground. And I really feel like when you lose, okay, it's a company of what was 141,000 people before all the cuts. There's clearly people that are there for the paycheck and clearly people that were there who maybe shouldn't have been. Like any growth company, hires, oh, we've gone too far. Mm-hmm. Maybe this department we didn't need, or these contract workers we don't need. And yeah, there's ways and means that I would treat people that, especially in Europe, you treat people a certain way that you can't treat people in America in terms of layoffs. But either way, I genuinely think that that supercharger team cared so much about what the work they were doing. They knew it was important work. As Kyle says, this has been an open goal for anyone.
Right.
Anyone could have done this. Ford, GM, anyone. And it took a startup that for years and years was fighting, you know, bankruptcy and had so much the weight of the world against them. And they came through and they did it against all odds. And we are where we are now, which is, I think, firing the best team in the entire organization. It, from the outside looking in, it was the bit of the company that didn't seem broken. So we can get into the whole 100% uptime thing if you think, but I don't think that is any justification at all. There was nothing wrong with the supercharging network. That I never ever had a problem with it. I never heard of people having problems with, I turned up at this site and they were all down. Right. If it happens, it's a massive grid problem that is taking out houses and businesses as well. It's frustrating.
And one of the things that Tesla, that Elon mentioned in that tweet, he said, you know, we're going to continue to build out the network just at a slower pace. We're going to focus on, you know, 100% uptime, which, you know, that's, they can't get better than what they are now. You know, of course, there are some stations that are broken every now and then, but I mean, it'd be very difficult to move the needle even a little bit better. But the last thing that I thought was really interesting was he mentioned that we're going to focus on expanding current locations. You know, I would have felt better if he said we're going to focus on upgrading current locations from V2 to V4s or something like that, you know, but no mention of V4s. But he talked about expanding current locations. And I don't know if that's necessarily what he should be doing with the money. Number one, it's very expensive to expand a location. It's nearly as expensive as adding another location across the street. So it's just, that was kind of a weird part of that tweet. Do you guys have any thoughts on expanding existing locations? Like, Kyle, you use superchargers all the time. You know, I don't come across too many that are full. I know it does happen every now and then. In some areas, it's needed. But I think the vast majority of the supercharger areas, superchargers, don't necessarily need an expansion right now. I just thought that was an odd comment.
I think Kyle had said in one of his things, when Tesla installs a location, they generally utilize as much as, you know, they do full utilization. So to add, expand it, they would have to, you know, put in a lot more, you know, transformers, et cetera. Is that right, Kyle?
Yeah, it's the exact same process of building a new site. You'd have to call the utility, wait 18 to 24 months for a transformer because you just, that utility just lost trust in Tesla if they're not building any more sites that they put in transformers for. So they're no longer at the top of the list to get power electronics. You know, I'm just saying that this is a real possibility. I don't know that to be true. But expanding a new site is beneficial in certain areas, especially when you're in rural areas. I'm thinking like Green River, Utah, other places in the middle of nowhere that there are just aren't many other amenities around and you just want to add capacity. Tesla has done that over the years. That's really not really anything new. But pretty much every single Tesla site you'll get to, if you look at the green box, which is the transformer, you can look at, okay, it might say 750 kVA as an example. That'll say roughly equivalent to 750 kilowatts of capacity. If you look at how many cabinets are there, if there's two version 3 cabinets, well, that's already maxing out their transformer. And you can actually oversubscribe transformers sometimes, but with charging, typically it's not a great idea. So, you know, in order to upgrade, let's say you wanted to double the size of that site, you would have to call the utility, get building permits, do the entire process of building a new site over again, dig new conduit, you know, close down the existing site while this is happening. And I just don't think it's a great solution. If Tesla had built in a bunch of extra capacity at sites, I mean, put in big transformers, extra conduit run, which they do at certain sites, but not many, then that makes sense. So maybe they're just going to fill in all the extra easy capacity that they have at certain sites. There might be 100 or less that are out there that have, you know, provisions for extra power and upgrading to version 4 whenever we see. We still have not seen what version 4 is yet. So we don't even know. And, you know, version 4 today, for the viewers who don't realize, they're just the posts, but they're still hooked up to version 3.5 cabinets.
Right. Yeah. The premise the premise for the version 4 was up 500 kilowatt charging, basically? Was that the potential?
We don't know any specs.
Right. Okay. But more than, because right now they're 250 and the rest of the industry is 350 kilowatts.
Technically, you know? Don't look at the post level, look at the charger level. So right. The charger of a V3 is 365-ish kilowatts spread across 4 posts.
Right, right, right.
And so version 4 might be something, I don't know, more. Hopefully, it's got to be more.
Right. I mean, I was expecting, 800,000 volts, basically, systems, right, with 500-600 amps.
We're expecting it, of course, but the output, I'm more concerned about the actual charger than the individual posts. We need site level conversion power because Tesla does a really good job of, honestly, they're the class leaders in site level distribution when it comes to sharing power. Very rarely do you ever show up at a site and people don't get 250 kilowatts in their Tesla. But when you think that's almost maxing out just one full cabinet, but they're able to shift power from each cabinet on an 800 volt DC bus, they already do high voltage between the cabinets. You know, it's pretty cool. We don't know what version 4 is. We can have a wish list of what we want it to be, but no one has any idea what the specs will be.
And I don't think we're going to get it anytime soon now, because I would be under the impression that a good portion of the team that would have been working on that was the team that was just cut. You know, that would be the engineers working on the infrastructure. No, Kyle?
I don't know. My speculation, which I don't really like to speculate, my gut feeling is the engineering's done on V4. They just have to get through the production stuff. And so perhaps it's done. The question is, what happens when you run into problems, though? Who's there to fix it? I don't know. But someone just mentioned something about the UK having version 4 posts. They're rated at 1,000 volts on the dispenser, but they're still only hooked up to 500 volt cabinets. So the chargers are not up to 1,000 volts confirmed yet. My guess is version 4 should be up to 1,000 volts. But
so that actually is a nice segue into one of the explanations that I've seen online. So I've kind of gone looking. Whenever I get one of these situations where I don't get it, like this is what I do day in, day out, is to try and understand this and then distill information and tell listeners to my podcast, what does it mean, right? So I'm so convinced that this is a bad idea. I've gone looking, normally in forums and things like that, a couple of LinkedIn posts I found from people that are defending Elon Musk to the hilt and Tesla and saying this is a fantastic idea. He's got a grand plan. He's playing 4D chess. One of the arguments given is that as a business, it is better for them because they've got all the production facilities in Buffalo. They can make superchargers themselves, that they are now pivoting to a model where they will sell V4s to third parties. They will sell the hardware on a nice big fat markup and let everybody else do the hunt for land, the negotiation with landlords, the leasing agreements, dealing with utilities, upgrading the grid, getting it in place. And all they have to do is make a V4 dispenser, let Shell or BP slap their logo on it, and they can do all the hard work. Tesla rakes in all the cash. It's a brilliant move, and they're going to make loads of money out of this. I don't buy that because it's only happening in a very small amount of cases at the moment, and I don't see how that replaces the ability for someone to decide what car to buy and think, you know what, I just need to travel easily. The Tesla Supercharger network is the reason I'm buying my Tesla, and I know that I turn up at this station, I plug in, it works, I go away. That has been the reason to buy for countless Tesla owners. I don't get the argument yet. No one can do it with the numbers that make sense to me to say Tesla pivot to being a hardware manufacturer, a white label manufacturer. Everybody else can slap their logo on V4 dispensers. That's the argument the Tesla fans, some are making to justify this.
But Martin, that would have happened anyway. So
it's happening
with that
already.
Argument, yeah, with that argument, they're basically saying that, which these are the people that were saying the supercharger network could be the biggest profit center for Tesla in the near future.
Yeah, 2.5 billion a year, yeah.
Right. So now they're saying, oh, actually Tesla wouldn't have made any money from selling electricity, which actually, if anyone had any chance to make any kind of money selling electricity, it would have been Tesla, because they produce their own equipment. They use it. They can purchase it cheaply. They prefabricate it, so their install costs are low. They had it dialed in, where I'm sure not every site was profitable for them in terms of demand charge versus utilization. But I bet as a whole, I would put money on the network was actually cash flow positive. Maybe there's still a bunch of Teslas out there with free supercharging. I don't know. But I think if everyone was paying, then they would be making money on that, which is kind of crazy. And to Abe's point here in the comments, you still need a supercharger team to sell hardware. And right now there's no one there. I mean, look, you can hire salespeople. This just obviously is gone. This is the craziest thing we've seen happen in the charging industry. No question. We've spent 37 minutes on it, but what we don't know, that's the thing. We just don't know why. We don't know what the future plans are. And from the outside looking in, none of us can make a rational synopsis as to any how this was a good idea in any possible way. So
the other argument I've seen people saying, but the job is done. Like, they showed the industry how it should be done. That's it. Tesla can say, right, this is how you do it. You go away and do it. That's the other argument I've seen, is that they've done their job. They've proved the point. This is how we do it. We don't need to do any more to supercharger stations.
And that, but then don't invite automakers on. Right. Don't just say, oh, you know what? Why don't you come join our party and F you.
Yeah. As soon as you agree, just pull the carpet out from under them. Right. That's the thing. The timing, you know, it's so the timing is so nuts that it's almost as if Elon just wanted to throw a hand grenade into the industry. Sure, come on and sign all these agreements. And as soon as everybody just begins to join, just boom, you know, and you know, That's why I said earlier, if Tesla wanted to do this, if this was their plan to be an equipment manufacturer or to just get the supercharger network to a certain location and then say, okay, we've done it. This is how you do it, guys. Now it's on you to invest and do this. Okay, I wouldn't agree with it, but I can understand it. But the way this was done, with just 500 jobs gone and all of these partners so like just left hanging, not knowing who to contact, that's what leads you to believe this wasn't planned. Like this is what we're going to do. This was Elon, you know, just, you know, having a hissy fit and just firing everybody without thinking the full consequences through. And it's unfortunate because there's a lot of good people that were working with the Tesla teams on a number of programs. There are utilities out there that invested millions of dollars for infrastructure upgrades that Tesla told them, you have to upgrade the infrastructure here. We're going to put a supercharger. All of these industry stakeholders, let alone the OEMs that me and Kyle have personal relationships with, the people in the charging departments, the people that were working with Tesla on this, they're all just, they don't know what to do now. They've completely lost faith in Tesla with this move. You just don't run a company like this. I mean, you don't run a mom and pop coffee shop that way, let alone a multi-billion dollar, you know, a automobile company. And you know, he just proved that he just doesn't care about other people, Elon. He just doesn't care about anybody but himself. And that's the only way you could rationalize this, because nobody that cares about relationships, about partnerships, about your customers, about the people that work for you, nobody does this way. If you need to cut 500 jobs or 10% of your workforce, I understand that. There's ways you can do it where it softens the blow and it doesn't leave all of your partners hanging out to dry like he did. He is, you know, just he's just proven, he's shown his colors, Elon, here. And I know, you know, I've gone through a lot of stages of Elon, from worshiping him practically. Well, I don't really worship anybody, but for really admiring him 15 years ago to saying, you know, giving him a pass because he's done so many things well. Well, he does a couple things that are a little wacky, to go into the point where saying, yeah, I kind of know the real Elon now and I don't like that man, to now just saying, you know, he's just somebody I don't want in my life at all, you know, and it's unfortunate that this is what he's done to the guy that says he's out there to help the world and to get the world off fossil fuels. And, you know, he made so many statements about how he does this not to make money, but to make the world a better place and save the world from global warming and get us off fossil fuels and all this stuff. And this just smacks that in the face. Nobody could believe that line from him anymore after this, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Eddie Hong asked, how many billion-dollar companies has Tom run? So I'll just say, I have run 0 billion-dollar companies, but he just invited everyone to join the Supercharger Network. Everyone's changing from CCS to NACS or SAE 3400, which I guess is what we're going to call it from now on. So this is the time where you have your competitors all sending their cars to your stations where you can charge them more to make money. This is the time, I would think, like, I've never run a billion-dollar company, but I would want to lean into that and expand, you know, invest money, grab as much market share as I can, because you got all these people that are going to be coming to your networks to charge because you have the reputation and, you know, you have the existing infrastructure for forever. And now nothing. I don't know.
So in the comments, great context, which can help all of our audience, our listeners and viewers, understand the point of today's show. So Jones One says Google fired 12,000 people. No one cared. Okay, well, I think they did care, by the way. But I'm sure everyone who got fired and their friends and family cared. But
it's a big deal.
You help us make an important context on this. This may just be 500 people in a company of, well, it was 141,000 before these layoffs 2 weeks ago. We all think this was the crown of Tesla's achievements. And if you have to distill it, if you have to distill one thing that Tesla has done incredibly over the last 15 years, and that's almost impossible to do because they have incredible achievements under their belt. But if you really had to say that they did one thing that moved people to say, right, I can buy an electric car. It was the supercharger network that allowed you to drive long distance in an electric car when nobody else was doing that. So this is, yeah, this is less than 12,000 people. You're absolutely right. But these are 500 or so. We think it's 90% of that team, by the way, and it's the people who are involved in expanding the network. Absolutely crucial to the best thing that we all think that they did. And you can make a great argument for software and powertrain engineering and all those things. And I get it. We could have that argument. But arguably, the supercharger network was the one thing that they did that allowed you, as a combustion driver, to go, now I can buy an electric vehicle that's not, you know, a Nissan Leaf, that will drive long distances across the US. And that was the achievement they did. And that is the team that has gone. So thank you for your comment. I don't necessarily agree with it, but you've helped us add context. The import of this, it's the kind of people they've let go.
Right. I think,
and Eddie, I've never run a billion-dollar company, but you don't have to run a billion-dollar company to know what's right and wrong. I did run a company with 60 employees that did about $10 million a year, which is probably more than what most people have run. So I know a little bit about managing people, dealing with vendors, building relationships. And, you know, I know what happened here is not right.
Right. Mark Norman says, I'd still buy a new M3P, just saying. And that's a fair point.
Me too.
Okay. You know, I'm looking at, like, I'm on the fence with this one, because, you know, if I had the cash, would I buy a new Tesla Model 3 Performance? Because I really do like a lot of things
about
that car.
How could you not? It's the best value thing for what you like.
True, but man, I still have an
issue.
Do
you think about Tim Cook every time you make a phone call on your iPhone?
No,
I don't.
I think about turning signal stocks is what I'm thinking about. Really.
That's like a $100 retrofit that a company would send you for free.
I would hope so, but yeah.
No, I mean, I know so.
Yeah. There's just so many. Yeah, but that's still a small niche of the market. You know, Tesla Model 3 Performance or sedans. It's, you know, so Tesla makes Tesla Model Y is like, I guess, the best selling car in the world, actually, or has been at certain points in recent history.
3 is no slouch. They're everywhere now. I saw almost more new Model 3s than old Model 3s rolling around LA last week.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
I just got back from Europe and I saw one Tesla Model 3 in Abu Dhabi, like a new the refresh. I saw one.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, they're everywhere in LA at least.
Right. Yeah, because they're producing them here. They're not producing them in Europe, right? So they have to ship them from here
Shanghai.
To there and
no,
a little behind
go
the curve.
From Shanghai.
Oh, right. Only Shanghai, or is it?
Only Shanghai is Model 3.
Oh.
No Fremont Model 3s make their way to Europe anymore.
Right. The ones in Europe are from Shanghai.
Yeah, and Canada, I believe.
Right, it's true. Yeah. So...
Oh, okay. So a great point to expand upon. So Yari says the NACS is a standard now. I'll just stop you there. J3400 is a standard. NACS is a shorthand term that Tesla used in the interim from the Tesla connector to it becoming a standard. Now, you always use J3400 to avoid the confusion with supercharging, because NACS is not supercharging and J3400 is not supercharging. It continues, meaning Tesla doesn't need to lead the innovation anymore. The most important is the communication protocols, but that is also a standard, no problems. Yes, you're correct. J3400, the Tesla plug, call it what you want, is CCS.
So yeah, which, by the way, was not a Tesla communication invention.
Right.
That was done, they're using CCS communications.
So you're correct. It's a standard. Now, it says they don't need to lead the innovation anymore, which comes back to the point hopefully we've maybe covered, if we didn't cover our thoughts enough on that. They do need to lead the innovation. I'm not looking around going, look at all these companies doing it better than Tesla now,
right,
in terms of charging. I am in automotive, by the way. I know that annoys Tesla fans. I am finding cars that have got a way better interior. They've got way better software in cases. I'm loving using Android in the Polestar, by the way. I think that is a fantastic innovation. I also love using Apple CarPlay. That makes cars work very well. Do I care that car makers have to hand over all of their data and the BMS and everything to Silicon Valley companies like Apple and Google? And there's all arguments going in terms of how much Apple want control over the next version of CarPlay, and a lot of the car makers are pushing back on that. I don't care. Like, it just works really well. Are there better EV powertrains out there now? Yes. Are there cheaper EVs? Yes, because they're in China. Is BYD more innovative in terms of their pricing? Yes. Is CATL a better battery maker than the 4680 project? Yes, no doubt about it. But in terms of the charging networks, my friend, no, nobody is doing it better than the supercharging network. So Tesla do need to drive the innovation. So I will push back hard on your point that nobody else needs to. Tesla's job is done. Like, brilliant. Off we go home, girls and boys. Finish that. No, that is the most important job that Tesla was doing, was building sites that were, you know, not 2, 3, or 4 chargers, but 40, 50, 60, 118 chargers in a site, and showing everyone, this is what we can do, and it's not even our main business. So you charging companies, and it's your main business, why don't you step up and think about how you do that? And yes, maybe it was loss-making, and maybe it only just became cash flow positive in the last couple of quarters, which is the argument I've seen. But that was what they did so well, and it's why I think we're so frustrated and concerned. And you're absolutely right. Nothing changes today. You can go drive your Tesla right now, plug it in, it'll work. Nothing changes today.
So let's leave it on a positive note, because I'm sure there's other stuff we have to talk about, which is really, this is all we're talking about today.
I mean, we can talk about some more stuff, but
we got Acura ZDX, which isn't that exciting, I guess. Awesome. But yeah,
I mean, Martin's gone. So yeah, no, I definitely want to talk to you all about what you've been doing besides this. But yeah, I mean, you know, we got lots of people watching, so I think we should fully explore. This question, right?
I didn't know we dedicated the show to it. So yeah, then keep rocking.
I mean, there's not a whole lot out there, and there's like new, as far as like new vehicles, you know, debuted this week. There's nothing that comes to mind. There's, you know, y'all did the Fiat 500 introduction, 500E, pretty kind of interesting situation. But I just want to make sure we've covered all our bases with this supercharger news. Like,
well, so, Anthony says, let's move on. I disagree. I have one more question for the team, Dom, may I?
Yes, please.
Okay, right. A year ago when this happened, let me take that comment off screen. I'm not ready to move on. A year ago when Ford announced this, I said I would love to have been a fly on the wall in that boardroom moment, because you are relying on Elon Musk not waking up one day and changing the rules of the game. I said that a year ago, and we all wanted to be a fly on the wall. To be, what's in the contract? Like, there must be something in the contract to say that Elon can't just wake up and you're not using my network anymore. And now we know, 12 months has passed, J3400 has become a standard. It's no longer in Tesla's hands. The standards body have control of that, and charging manufacturers, anyone can put that plug on the end of their charger. It's got nothing to do with supercharging, but it is Tesla's thing. But that's a really serious point. If you're in the board of VW, and we've alluded to this already, Ford and GM and Volkswagen, BMW, Mercedes, or maybe you're putting together the IONNA network right now, and they've said, oh yeah, we'll put J3400, we'll just do double heads on all of our chargers, and it'll be CCS1 and J3400. Do they? Or do they just recommit to CCS1? Like, that's the danger. No. I'd be tempted if I were them. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say stick with J3400 because it's the most consumer friendly outlet, and whatever works behind the scenes. But just
it's a better plug,
right? Just that physical thing is a big deal, and that's the way I believe the industry should have went that way a decade ago. You know, instead of sticking with this big clunky connector, you know, but it's kind of ridiculous. We're even there to begin with, but you know, things have moved on from that, and so I think it's too late to walk that back. Maybe some will.
Maybe we'll just switch to CCS2, get 3-phase AC charging. Let's just restart. Let's use CHAdeMO for everything.
Right.
I've got a mini E plug here from 2009 that worked pretty well. Let's bring that back.
Yeah, that weird looking thing. Yeah.
Well, I know we have to move on, but you know, the one thing that I do want to, a question I want to throw out is, what about the other manufacturers that haven't solidified this the partnership yet? I mean, they signed the contracts and everything, but right now only Ford and Rivian actually are complete and you can use them. GM is going to happen really soon. They already started pre-selling their the adapters. Well, they should be starting soon. There, you can go to a GM dealership now, give your VIN. Matter of fact, I'll probably do that with my Bolt and get your adapter. What happens with these other companies that were currently working with Tesla to get all the back end, the communications work? How about I'm sure part of the supercharger team was part of the team working on the adapter. And I know that Tesla adapters is complete, but there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I can't even really talk about adapter wise with other companies and so forth. I just don't know. What does this mean for this next year? Is everything going to get pushed back? Are we going to see some cars, some OEMs not get their supercharger access on the timeline that they were expecting? Now, they didn't announce it, which was good. Like, you didn't have Kia say, in August, we're coming online. And then Volvo saying in June, we're coming online. So there's no expectation set. But if there's a big gap now, like if no other car companies, get it like in the next 6 months, we know that it was because of this. What do you guys think? Do you think that's going to slow down the other companies coming online?
I expect the GM be online by now. I'm not sure what's the hang up. I think it was spring, right? Spring's going to be over in a month, basically, right? A month and a half officially. So that timeline seems like already out the window.
Their team didn't get together with the Tesla team and get everything ironed out. When I talked extensively to Ford and Rivian, they both told me, and I did it on videos, how hard their teams worked with the Tesla supercharging team to make this work. And they just dedicated teams of people to do it. So maybe, GM was just kind of like, yeah, we'll get around to it. And now I think they wish they worked on it a little bit harder, a little bit sooner, because the whole team that they were working with may no longer be there.
Right. And that helps GM sells cars. GM needs to sell if they want to sell cars, they need to have their customers have to have places they can charge them. And the existing networks, not really good enough, right? You need to have all the networks. You need to be able to charge anywhere. Tesla Supercharger Station, CCS, Electrify America, EVgo.
I just received a note that is on topic, which is, I don't think even the automakers know when the next batch of adapters are coming.
Right. That's the adapters, right? But that's the big question. What's going on with the adapters? Are they?
No one knows.
No one knows.
Could be delayed. Sounds like delayed. We don't know. But it's from a trusted source.
Right.
I can tell you what's going to happen. I believe the companies, the individual companies, are going to subcontract and make them themselves. Because Tesla's not building these things in Fremont. I'm sure they have suppliers in Taiwan or China or somewhere that making at least making components for them, Kyle. Or what they'll do is they'll send a bunch of them over and they'll reverse engineer the damn things and just say, start making these for us. Because they can't wait on Tesla to do it, you know?
So there are some third-party options out there for Ford owners and Rivian owners who can now use the Tesla Supercharger network. And Tom, you have on your State of Charge YouTube channel reviews, pretty thorough reviews of these adapters. So if people are interested in that and they're worried about, ever getting one from Tesla, whatever, they can go look at your test for that resource.
And if you order the one from A to Z, use my coupon code State of Charge. You get 10% off. So, it's $20 off because it's like $200.
Right. Right. Is this horse dead? Have we beat this thing to death? I don't know.
I feel like it's all I've been talking about for 3 days and there's been no new information other than there's some silver lining here, but most of it's just confusion and we don't really know why. And of course, really looking forward to finding more information about maybe why this happened. At this point, it's already happened. Maybe why doesn't matter as much anymore. And it's just, how do we move on?
So that's all I've seen too for the last 3 days while I've been traveling and trying to get back home. All supercharger talk all the time. So what is the... we were talking earlier about, so Elon Musk is basically the PR mouthpiece now for Tesla. What is he saying on Twitter? I just on X.com. I scrolled through, I don't know, few days worth of tweets, which is a lot. I mean, a lot of posts from Elon, replies and stuff. And it's all just like political stuff that he's, you know, talking about. There's no messaging about what's happening with this.
I agree. Let me make a prediction. Hopefully I'm wrong. I believe that Tesla's competitors are going to take a pause. I think they're going to take a breath because... Okay.
You don't think they want to step in and fill the gap and like take a leadership role?
No, I think they're going to stop, and I think they're going to see what happens in the next 3 to 6 months. Because I've been through that phase of where's the announcement from IONNA? Where's the announcement from Electrify America? Right. Why aren't they? Yeah. And then I came the other side of that and thought, well, at the minute they've got everything to lose by shooting their mouth off and nothing to gain. So I think they and the other car makers will just keep their powder dry. And
well, Electrify America released a press release yesterday.
I didn't see that. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I didn't see that.
And so it shows that they're now going with another 1,000 more chargers than originally planned. So they were going to do 4,000, now 5,000. I forget the time period.
I saw that in the comments. Yeah, I wonder what that alluded to. So that's an extra 1,000 chargers.
Yeah,
so
I have it. We have it. I'm actually podcasting about it today after this for the Out of Spec podcast. So I'll learn and read through it. I haven't read through it yet.
Well, that's incredible. And it'll be interesting to see when they go in the ground and when they don't. In terms of the OEMs, again, I think they will pause. I'm not sure that they were willing participants in this this Ford party. And I know why Jim Farley did it. He didn't bet the house on it. Ford are going to be just fine. Whether EVs take off or not in 15 years, Ford are going to be fine. It's a well-run company, and they've got great cars to buy. And they keep talking. I think their current thing is called Power of Choice, or the Power of Choice. Gas, hybrid, EV will make it all. You buy what you want. So that's their thing. That's going to get them through the tough times.
But I think messaging.
Okay, yeah. I think many of them. But look, the back end of that is horrible. By the way, the back end of having to delay gigafactory build outs and partnerships on cell production, it's all horrible. I think it's been such a wild month for Tesla. When you look at how they moved the industry on Battery Day. When you had Elon and Drew Baglino on stage in 2020, talking about 4680 cell production themselves, how it was, you know, essentially they needed to, it was to hedge that if nobody else can do this, we'll do it ourselves, and we all believed them. Now, this week in the news, obviously, Drew Baglino, you know, VP, senior VP or VP, left the company and sold all his stock. Which I think was just under $200 million, by the way. That's a nice return on dedicating most of your adult working life to one company. He's been there a long time, and congratulations to him. He wants nothing to do with Tesla anymore. It's really sad to see. And you think, well, okay, but Tesla are very, very good at, more recently, being an advocate for the electric vehicle industry. Elon doesn't do that as much anymore, but I really feel that they were letting their other executives have their moment in the sun. You know, there was a lot of them on stage at that event. It went all on stools. You look at that lineup, and there's people in that lineup that aren't there anymore. And they were at least guiding the conversation, moving the industry to J3400. Rohan Patel was doing a fantastic job there, and he's gone. And you go, okay. But one of the things they've been so good at is driving the excitement about electric vehicles forward, and maybe their stock price, I don't get involved in all of that, has been highly inflated because people get excited that they're a fizzy company, a growth stock. But certainly, they've been able to tell the story about what they're doing. And that investor relations role with Martin Viecha doing an incredible job of just telling people this is, you know, this is where we are, and with the institutional investors and the retail investors, and he's gone. And Rebecca Tannucci, who I know you guys have all met at various things like the Charon festivals and stuff, she's gone. And so these very, very good senior people are all leaving. It's not a house of cards, because Tesla, they're going to be fine. If you own a Tesla, you're going to be fine for a long time. Yeah, yeah. There's no problem. The cars are not turning themselves off. I'd be more right if I bought a Fisker. And I feel for those owners. But I think the OEMs are going to take a pause, take a breath. I think this puts back how easy it will be to charge in your country significantly. I think people will wait and see how it all just unfolds now. I'm really sad about it.
Yeah. So, Kyle, what have you been driving this week? I've been driving the 2024 Prius. I'll tell you, just like last night. So I've been traveling for days. And
hey, how is the new Prius? It looks nice.
It looks great. It sucks.
Really? Because our team loved it. I have not driven it
really?
Yet. But okay, everyone maybe on our I don't team drive is enough. Like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, maybe I don't drive enough cars, or maybe, you know, I was like super tired when I got into it. I'm like traveling for days. You know, it took forever. But I jump into this car. I've never been in one before. Jump in. I tried to get a Tesla Model 3 because I'm familiar with it. I just wanted to get home. But I'm in here. It took me, you know, 5 minutes to kind of get going. And, you know, like this little skinny steering wheel. The steering's kind of vague. It's not meant
to be a performance car.
Right. But even as, yeah. And I've got more used to it as I was, you know, as I spent more time in it. My first, like, initial impressions were really, really bad. But as I got more used to it, I started to lighten up on it a little bit, you know. But, it's just,
wow, that's
it's
the
just
first
weird.
Negative review I've ever heard of the new Prius.
Yeah, I don't like all the lights on the screen, like flashing this like the video game. Oh, you can game, you know, you're this. I got 50 miles a gallon or something like that on my way home, and I was, you know, not sparing any of the horses. So that's great. I mean, that's wonderful. That's what, and it's not the Prius Prime. It's just a regular Prius hybrid, basically. I think I haven't even walked around the car yet to look, but I'm pretty sure it's not the Prime. Yeah, just all the lights, you know, flashing this and that and just glaring off the windshield. I'm so used to driving like the Tesla Model 3. I don't get any of that. You know, I can see out the window. The view is like nice. I can see the road. Here I got little lights and flashing and the reflection off of that. And I don't know. It just wasn't to me, and the stereo was not great. Right. I'm so used to a nice sound stereo now. It's like, I cranked it up.
Well, that's the thing. Model 3 just does so many things.
It does
so well.
You know, Tesla does so many great things, and it's frustrating that, you know, when stuff like this other stuff happens, or if they have like,
but it doesn't affect your car.
No. Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm happy. I got a new update this morning. You know, it's been waiting for me to get home, and I'm gonna have a new Dude Loop supercharger.
Yeah, with 12.6, are we up to now?
I believe that's what it is. Yeah. 12.3.6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing that. I've been meaning to do an FSD video, but my only car with it, because my Model S never actually got the free trial, just they forgot about that. And my Cybertruck that I paid for it on doesn't even have autopilot. My Model 3 has it, but that's out with a friend.
Right. Do you know if you got the 12.3.6 yet?
Don't know. I have not even...
I haven't seen anybody mention it, but I haven't been super, you know, dug into that conversation like the last few days. So I'm not sure how widespread it is. Maybe a bunch of people in California already have it. I can expect it to do, but I haven't really seen a bunch of videos about it. But yeah, I plan on doing that when I'm a little bit better rested and I can make a video that, you know, with good feedback and yeah.
Good Prius review. I'm glad to see some change up here. I have not driven one yet. I really want to.
Yeah,
I'll get one in.
It does have some, like the I wasn't really sure what was going on for a while because I could feel there's a motor, you know, handling the lane change or lane keep assist or kind of, you know, functionality, and it was almost kind of like autopilot in some ways. I didn't have the kind of confidence, you know, I have with autopilot, you know.
But was it lane centering or just ping ponging?
It wasn't ping ponging too badly, you know. I had one feature on, one feature off, and then I had turned one off because it was just like I didn't, you know, it was just everything else was over. It was all overwhelming, you know, with all the other little things to kind of get used to the car, and with it pulling on the wheel and stuff. I turned that off as soon as I figured out how, and then after a while I turned it back on. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is helping me out. This is not so bad. Because even with that turned off, sometimes I'd go over the center line a little bit, and it would like keep me in the lane like I'm supposed to, even though I thought I had that part turned off. I don't know.
take Dom's review with a grain of salt. I drove the new Prius, and I really liked it. Okay. But I was going in like off of experience of previous Priuses, so like, you know, almost anything would have been better. And also, Dom got that car after like traveling for 2 days straight, connecting from Europe to
Middle East,
the Middle East, then to New York, then flying to Atlanta. He's probably up for 2 days, tired, you know, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't know, Dom. I think you need to take another swipe with it, because I thought it was pretty good for what it is. Okay. You know, I actually enjoyed my time with it. So
I have it for a few more hours today, so I think I might take a little run around town just to kind of give it a fair shake, really. Yeah. But so what did you drive? You mentioned the Acura ZDX.
Yep, so we can talk about that now. We can also mention that my Cybertruck got the off-road update that everyone's been waiting for. So that's pretty cool. It's got a locking differential now, which is great, because mine only has one locking diff in it. So that's enabled, which is great.
Last we heard, you gave it to another publication to drive for a week. They didn't break it, no?
No, Jordan babysat it and made sure they didn't do anything crazy.
I saw you were on the Motor Trend podcast.
Yep, I did a couple episodes of The Inevitable, did a bunch in LA. It was just a crazy week, and it's now I'm home this week, just have so much to catch up on, stuff like that. So I've just been like editing and doing office work and nothing super exciting. Right. I got to get all the Range Rovers serviced. Oh my goodness, both Range Rovers are in its service right now. Surprise. So that is,
this is my shocked face.
But you know, it's basically, I always have all of the cars kind of due for service around this time of the year, so it's just shuttling, you know, summer tire swap overs, oil changes, all the stuff, and I love it. This, to me, that's always fun and therapeutic, to just get stuff serviced and, you know, manage the cars. I love that. So right. Yeah, just been doing stuff, and but ZDX, that is Acura's. Yeah, so this is Acura's new first electric car, I think, and newest offering. They claim the most powerful Acura ever, but it makes a lot less power than the last Acura that was the most powerful Acura ever.
Which you drove also recently, sense. Right?
I drove the NSX as well, but this makes more torque than the NSX, so maybe that's what they're talking about. Right. So everyone thinks the ZDX looks like a hearse. I see it from certain angles. I think it's a great looking SUV. The whole video, I'm like, this thing looks amazing. And I look in the comments, everyone's like, that looks awful. I don't know. I think it looks great. So I actually like the ZDX from the outside looking in. Pretty cool.
It's just that whatever C-pillar, you know, it's just got that funny thing. It just puts me in mind of a hearse too. But the rest of it looks great, I thought.
Yeah, maybe Martin can pull up a photo or video here. I know he's working on it.
So you already reviewed the Honda Prologue. Is this just the Prologue in a different skin with more features?
No. Completely different donor vehicle from GM. Oh. So Prologue is Blazer, which is the smaller platform.
Okay.
And this is Lyriq. So it's the bigger one.
So, that's good to know. People don't really understand that, I think.
Yeah, a lot of people. I watched a couple of reviews where they kept comparing it to the Blazer, but I'm like, this isn't the Blazer sister car. The donor vehicle for this one is the Lyriq. Right. And they're built, one's built in Mexico, one's built in the U.S. Like, they're not even, I mean, yeah, they maybe appear similar from the outside, but I was like, I don't know what's going on there. I did an interview with John Huang, who is the chief engineer of this car and Prologue, and has worked at Honda forever. And it tanked. No one really cared. I knew no one would care. And of course, we put up Supercharger news right after that episode. But if anyone's curious about like the GM and Honda collaboration, that was a fascinating, eye-opening conversation as to how Honda and Acura approached General Motors to build their electric cars. And the sum of it is Honda and Acura pretty much, I don't want to say did nothing without saying did nothing, but almost did nothing. They had the spec requirements. Honda and Acura did the design of the vehicles within the limitations of the platform, but they just went down a menu of here's everything available for Ultium. They said, okay, we'll tick the air suspension box for ZDX. We'll put in this steering rack for the Type S. We'll put in the big brakes here. We'll do all of these things. And I just thought that was really fascinating how even the durability testing that I would expect Honda and Acura to do was done by General Motors. And they just are trusting them with their warranty and everything. So Honda and Acura haven't even done like mileage accumulation testing on these.
Wow, that's kind of calibration, it's suspension calibration?
Nothing, that was all GM.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Honda, oh my God.
Yeah, so that's basically, when I heard that, I was like, oh my God. Maybe it's a good thing, because maybe Honda and Acura, you know, I think from a tuning standpoint and how vehicles drive, Hondas and Acuras always drive great, in my opinion. I'm a pretty big fan of their entire lineups. They're never that powerful, but they just drive right. This doesn't feel anything like an Acura to me.
Okay. Does it feel like the Cadillac Lyriq?
Yeah, but a spicy version, because this is the Type S. So this is the sportiest Ultium vehicle I've driven up to this point. You know, Hummer EV, tri-motor, sure, that's crazy, but yeah, it's not really sporty. But this is still 6,000 pounds, over 6,000 pounds.
Ooh, man, GM, the Ultium system, the weight, man, this drives me crazy every time I hear that, you know?
Yeah, but it's missing the Shouty, you know, like Mark mentioned. Shouty is super handling, all-wheel drive.
Oh, right.
No Shouty here. So, unfortunately. Specs on the car, 102 kilowatt hour usable, 190 kilowatt peak DC fast charging, which is lame in 2024. Don't launch a car with 190 kilowatt peak charging in 2024. What are you doing? And then the fact that it doesn't even hold it past 25% in my test was ridiculous, and it just tanked. The range, because it's got a big battery, isn't so bad. 313 miles, 317, something like that, on the standard rear-wheel drive car, which starts at around 60,000, 64 grand. Then you can step up to the all-wheel drive. That's a $4,000 option. You're 67 and a bit, 68, something like that. And then this one, the Type S, is $74,500, all of which qualify for the $7,500 tax credit, which is great. However, you have to buy the Type S because the standard A-spec cars don't come with lane centering. How can you sell a brand new vehicle in 2024, a $60,000+ quote-unquote luxury in the premium segment, without lane centering? That is on your Prius.
It is, and it was pretty decent, actually, once I've wrapped my head around it on the Prius. No, nothing like that. That's... You get to wonder sometimes what this is, like a transition vehicle time for, I think, for Honda. Well, it was. I'm not sure what they're thinking now with everyone kind of, you know, the messaging hybrids again, you know. But Honda has been planning on building their own platform, right? Their own exclusive Honda platform to start producing, its vehicles, because it's been making, so it's making, done this collaboration with GM, and it's put out the Honda E previous to that, which is his own thing, but it's like a one-off. I don't know. Tom, do you have any ZDX questions?
Not really, but I do agree it looks like a hearse from the side there. Paint that thing black and you could just park it in in the parking lot of a funeral parlor and it'll fit right in. I think it looks okay. It's, you know, for that price range, without having even lane centering, I'm going to do a hard pass. I think I would definitely go for a Polestar 4 before I went for this.
Well, and Polestar 3 would be more the direct competitor. So, Tom, would you go Polestar 3 or this? Because that's going to be more money.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Bring for it.
Oh, okay.
I would go Polestar all day long over, because I know they build their own cars. So they have the Geely platform.
But at least it's in the family.
Right.
Matter? So that's the big question that I kept coming up with. Automaker partnerships are not unusual, and in many cases, they're very successful. The Supra comes to mind. That is a BMW Z4 reskinned. And that is a very successful product, a very desirable product, and perhaps one of the most fun modern cars. I mean, I love the new Supra. So is it bad that GM did this? Or obviously, it's not GM true to the brand.
But Honda is, I'm not sure that it's great that Honda did it. It's great for GM. They need scale and everything like that, so that helps them out. But
Honda, one of these massive automakers, couldn't build their own electric SUV for our market in time, says a lot.
True. And when your company is like Honda, which is a hardcore engineering company, that's what you do. That's what you're known for. An engine company is known for, you know, its engines originally, back historically. And so you look to it for its engineering skills and product development. And we're not seeing it yet.
I wonder if customers will care or not. I don't know that to be true. I will say everything inside is all General Motors, the software, the switchgear. It's not Acura. But I also think maybe that's not a bad thing, because I don't really like Honda Acura switchgear and software and stuff like that. So it may have not been a bad decision to do this. What I think is a bad decision here is the fact that it doesn't tell you state of charge on the display. Lyriq suffers from a similar thing. You have to shut the car off to get state of charge on the screen, like you see here. And you can ask it through voice, but only if you're signed into Google. And you can't adjust the route planning, arrival, state of charges. And the charging performance is pretty poor. And the fact that lane centering, any form of lane centering, is not available on the standard vehicle is crazy. And then you go, well, this is 74 grand. Holy smokes. maybe if you qualify for the tax credit, it comes down significantly. But if you don't, which a lot of people won't, because you're up in this premium segment, a lot of people make too much money. You're like so close to an e-tron or so close to an iX, and that is so much more car. So yeah.
I mean, size wise, how's this compared to the iX? Oh, there's Polestar 3, right?
No,
four.
Yeah, four. It doesn't go in order. They could have helped us out and gone 2, 3, 4.
So that's the one that doesn't compete with this, but the Polestar 3 does.
So. Oh yeah, I'm so sorry.
This is more sedan-like.
Yeah. I've got myself confused.
And one of them has no rear window, but I never know which one it is. It's all
that's the one, the four.
Okay, the sedan.
I'm actually driving the Polestar 3 in a couple weeks in Wyoming. I'm actually going to road trip my Polestar up there.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Cool. That should be kind of fun.
Awesome. Yeah. Polestar 1, Polestar 4. 1 minus 4 is 3.
You really have not had any sleep.
That's going to be such a great.
I mean, Polestar 3. Yeah, it's all so confusing.
Take the Polestar 1. That's a beast.
It's a great road tripper too. So
what a vehicle! I think it was on your personal channel. You did a mountain drive in that a couple of years ago, where you went through like a tank of fuel in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, just lunched a tank of fuel. Yes, it wasn't in mine. It was in a press car. I don't know if I would do that to mine, but
yeah, it was before you bought yours, and that was such a great video to watch because it's just you having fun. Didn't see another car on the road, and it just, you know, go, if you want to be interested in the engineering and the how that car was built, go and watch Carl's video on that.
Because the guy who bought that car was a viewer. And I from that shoot, there was an angle missing on a GoPro. He had to have a seat motor replaced or something under warranty. And he found my GoPro lodged under the seat. And he just mailed it back to me. And I have it somewhere around here. Yeah.
I love it. You sent it.
Here it is. This is the GoPro that was lodged under the seat from that very video.
Is amazing. You sent it so hard up the mountain that it just the GoPro ate itself and hid itself. It just hid. I don't want to see what he's doing.
Oh, that was such a funny thing. I get a message. He's like, "Hey, you remember that Polestar you reviewed the last time you ever drove one? Well, I bought that one, and here's your GoPro."
Amazing. Speaking of
Polestar is actually one of the very few stories this week that really caught my attention, because they did this thing with StoreDot, which is a battery development company. So the Polestar 5, this is the headline from Inside EVs, Polestar 5 prototype charges 10 to 80% in 10 minutes at over 370 kilowatts. So that's kind of interesting. I'm still not sure how that compares. I'm not quite sure that it compares with what CATL is doing with it's like 5C charging, but it's still an impressive thing. But it's a different technology. It's a silicone anode, I believe. So there's some expansion of the cells when that happens. But at least it shows that there's promise out there, and that Polestar is actively involved. Which is
interesting.
So
do you go for this charging performance, 10 to 80 in 10 minutes, or do you do Acura ZDX 20% to 80% in 42 minutes? Which do you go for?
What do you go for?
Man, putting out the hard questions today there, Kyle. I don't know. I was thinking,
but
like,
can you believe that they don't even say 10 to 80 because it just would have been too long. They say 20 to 80. And when you see someone write 20 to 80, you know, there's going to be a big number.
That's the red flag, right? Yes. Yeah. Oh, what are they hiding?
Yeah.
But Mike G raises a good point too. I think it's a 77 kilowatt hour or thereabouts pack. So some of the CATL packs are closer to 100 or more and doing like 11 and a half minutes, 10 to 80%. Which is, you know, I think better, and I'm not sure. And they're in production. These are things actually in cars in China, right?
I got to get to China. I've missed the Beijing show this year because there was so much going on in LA. We were invited to go, and I just could not make it happen, but I really should have done that because this is our world, and we're missing out on it, and it's crazy. I was just driving down the street in Fort Collins here yesterday, and I was looking around thinking about, okay, if we were in China, what would everyone be driving? And it would look nothing like our antiquated cars on the road here today.
Right. So I was just in Europe, my very first time in Europe. I'm like 50 something, and like I've never been to Europe before. So I know it's crazy, but it was such. So I saw all these cars that I've
where'd you go? What countries?
And seen about. I was in Budapest, Hungary, and yeah. Then I was in Bratislava, Slovakia, and then I was in Austria, the little town of Milk. And I put together a little car spotting video. That's not the greatest video because I'm all giddy and I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, just like electric cars and a lot of combustion cars too. That just the cool. Oh, I saw the coolest Porsche 356. I don't know if you saw it. I put it on Threads. I got angles from. It was so beautiful. It was like just pristine, polished, sitting there on this nice, beautiful street in Budapest on the Buda side of the river. It's just sitting there looking like $1 million, $2 million. I don't know. It's like, I couldn't believe it. And all these weird little cars from like the Honda Civic. Honda makes a Civic for Europe. It looks like a little UFO. It's the coupe.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And yeah. It's like,
I've driven one of those. They're pretty neat.
I'd seen it before, but I'd totally forgotten about it. Then I started seeing them like everywhere. But it was kind of interesting to see like the amount of cars in this part of Europe. So you've been spending a lot of time in Western Europe where they have like a lot of EVs. There were a fair amount, you know. I saw some taxi Model S taxis and a lot of iXs, a lot of BMW i3s, especially in Budapest. But it was kind of interesting to see. And then this sort of infrastructure. I didn't see any gas stations downtown in any of these places. I don't know if I saw one gas. I think I saw one gas station the whole time I was there. But I also didn't see any charging stations in the downtown of those areas. I didn't seek them out until I got to a little town of Milk in Austria. It's like, how do they charge up here? What do people even do? And then there was another
plug share. It still works over there.
Well, it's like mostly AC charging and people, you know, charge at home, I guess, for the most part.
AC charging is faster in a lot of. Not sure. All EVs, but in many instances, it's a lot quicker.
That's a good point. Yes, like 20, 22 kilowatts, because they have, you're on the, Martin can speak to this, right?
You're on three phase.
Or at least 11. So at least if you plug into you've got a car that you can normally spec an 11 kilowatt onboard charger, and you'd expect to get that because it's everything but domestic is three phase. Everything that's domestic over here, we're at 230, 240 volts. It'll be single phase coming into my property. But honestly, if you're either doing a new build or, a big renovation, there's not a massive cost difference. If you're going to bring power into your property or you're building a unit or something, you'd go three phase. And then you're going to be charging at 22 kilowatts AC, which if you've got any kind of dwell time of, 2-3 hours, honestly, that's plenty.
Yeah, that's almost a full charge for most European EVs since their average battery pack size is smaller than here. But nothing beats the Zoe 43 kilowatt AC charging.
Absolutely. I might buy one of those. We've got to get a run around this summer.
43 kilowatt AC charging in the Zoe, and they had infrastructure to support it. It's dying off now. You don't see any new ones going in, but you'll find some older spots around Europe, especially in Norway, a lot of 43 kilowatt AC posts.
Yeah, our original, it was called Electric Highway, which was launched by an electricity company called Ecotricity. They put a lot of units in that were co-funded by Renault-Nissan, and they would have had a 43 kilowatt AC plug on the side, as well as CHAdeMO and CCS2. They got bought by GridServe, and GridServe are kind of redoing all those sites because a lot of them were just one or two chargers. It was like 12 years ago. And so they're not getting replaced, obviously, like for like. But you can probably still find the odd 43 kilowatt AC plug around.
Yeah, but to your point, Dominic, is like AC charging in Europe is so nice because of even 11 kilowatt is sort of the bare lowest our average is 5 or 6. Right. That, and then like if you get more than 6 kilowatts, we go, oh, wow, we got a high power AC plug over here.
It's true. And if you have like an older Tesla with the PCS broken, you get 3 kilowatts like more.
Yeah. But who's to blame for a lot of this is actually ChargePoint, because that CT4000 situation was just their sales team went so hardcore and just blasted them across the country. But they're only 30 amps. maximum. Wow. Now they have a 48 and 80 amp version, so up to 19 kilowatts, but we still need a lot of current for that, so we won't see many of those. But hopefully moving forwards, we'll see higher power ones. But Tom, maybe you can speak to it. I've heard some issues at ChargePoint. Are they okay? Will they survive?
So, yeah, I've heard the same issues. I don't know really how deep it goes. Usually where there's smoke, there's fire, Kyle. I think that this isn't a very solid time for ChargePoint. We'll see. I've always questioned their business model, the fact that, you know, they're just selling off equipment and then leaving it up to the site host to completely handle everything from there on. You know, it's expensive equipment, and they charge a lot of money to maintain it, the annual maintenance fees. So it's kind of like, that's why so much level two or AC charge point chargers are abandoned, broken left in the public, because they cost so much to install and to maintain, and they're always going to lose money. You're never going to make money on them. You can't charge enough per kilowatt hour to make money on them until adoption was really high and the utilization was really high. So all these site owners, you know, the ChargePoint sales team would come in and tell them, look, you know, you'll get 10 cars a day at $2 an hour. And look at the business case. You'll be above water in 6 months. And 2 years later, the property managers are looking at them and saying, are you kidding me? I spent $15,000 and my total revenue is $1,100, you know? So, you know, and then they just shut them off, and or if the connector breaks, you know, let's say somebody drops a connector and breaks it. It's like $600 to roll an electrician out to take the charger apart and put in a new connector and cable. It's tough. And if they're not going to maintain the network like some of the other CPOs do, they just want to sell the equipment, Kyle. It's a tough business plan. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know. I tell you, talking about public charging infrastructure, I'm going to give our sponsor a plug.
Yes,
correct. And we talked about the new Grizzly Ultimate last week. That just launched last week, and it's an 80 amp charger. And United Chargers really envisions these being used more in public than in somebody's private garage. Of course, they'll sell it to you for your private garage. But when I interviewed Gleb, the CEO, he talked about the need for higher powered public charging, public AC charging that was affordable, that you can install. I mean, the thing only costs $700 up front. A charge point, public charge point charger costs like $5,000, you know? Right. And so you can install a lot of these for a lot less money. Of course, you got to deal with your utility, possible upgrades for the service or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just want to give them a plug that this is, the United Chargers really hopes to have this be out there in the public. You can sync it with the software, you know, to charge for it, just like a charge point, access control, all that stuff. So maybe we will get higher powered public AC charging, which would be really great. I mean, you know, imagine, you know, going to a movie and, you know, an hour and a half later, you come out, Kyle, and you got 25 kilowatt hour. You know, it's enough to drive 100 miles. So, you know, that's what we need.
Yeah.
One of the many things we need.
Right. And they're robust too. They have a track record, right? It's a Canadian company. They build them for Canadian winters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good for public use, because that thing, you could beat it with a baseball bat and you can't break it. I mean, of course you could drop and run over a connector and break a connector. There's nothing you could do about that. But the units themselves are extraordinarily robust. Good for public use.
Right.
Oh, before we go, a mention for two friends that I want to mention on the show. If you're interested in the electrical side of even what we do over here in the UK and Europe, and things like that, I have two friends that have a channel called eFix, EFIXX. They have something like 750,000 subs. They've built that channel in 3 years, almost at a million subs. Incredible. I drove up there to see them on Wednesday. They're in Skipton, north of Leeds. And so it was an early morning start. It was about 1,000 kilometers round trip, about 600 miles round trip in a day. So I left early morning and got back at 4:30 in the morning. So pretty much 24 hours of driving. But I went to do a live stream with them. They do live streams and also videos about how to, it's an electrician's education channel, but if you're into like charging and stuff. You'll find it interesting. They're called eFix, and had a good little 2-hour live stream with them talking about EV vans. Actually, if you want to check that out, I highly, highly recommend their channel. But yeah, like the Polestar will do 200 miles comfortably at 70-ish miles an hour. And so 20-minute stop on the way up, 20-minute stop on the way back, both times using the ABB CP500s or whatever they're called, CP550s, which are B500s, be 500 amp, 920-volt chargers. And that hardware is just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So, you know, you want to have those experiences when you're public charging of, great, that was a 20-minute stop. I've got more than I need. It just worked. But it's expensive because we paid about 90 pence a kilowatt hour. So I should have used the Tesla supercharger open one.
Yeah, should have used the superchargers. They're like 35 cents.
Yeah, the ones at Old Trafford or the Trafford Centre, rather not Old Trafford, in Manchester, I could have swung in there, 30 pence. But even the ones that are halfway up for me, which are around somewhere just south of Birmingham, they're like 40 pence.
Does your Polestar charge on superchargers?
Should do. I can't think that I haven't.
The only time that I've had an issue other than my e-Golf and our EV9 charging on Magic Dock was when I had a Polestar 2 in Sweden. I swung into a supercharger, couldn't get it charged. But I think I've seen other Polestars charging there. So this was early days of Tesla opening up the network. It was back in Europe when they opened up to other cars. And people were like, what are you doing here in a Polestar? This guy who doesn't even speak our language. he's like, he really has no idea what they're doing.
There's four of them on the M. There's four open ones. A load more open this week in the UK, by the way, to non-Teslas.
I'm sure they fixed it because I have charged the Polestar 2 in the US on superchargers that I think about it. So
maybe I'll go play. But there's four of them on the M4, which is like an hour from here. That's the closest. But there's a... There's such a price difference in using the supercharger network. Oh, we're back to supercharging. Sorry, and the others. It's not even competitive, but it wasn't on my route, so I didn't do that. But a fantastic little road trip this week in the car. Absolutely faultless charging network over here worked brilliantly. So, and both were new sites, and so both were 8 or 10. Of the ABB units, which is still not Tesla sized, but both of them were the GridServe sites, and
but GridServe seems like they're doing really good work.
Yeah, they've got their big sites that have, you know, 30 or 40 chargers on, and they're the ones under the canopies, covered in solar. Looks like a petrol station, and you go inside. They've got lounges and a gym and showers, and you can go and and cafes and all that kind of stuff in the big building they put with them. So where have they got that? Braintree, Norwich, Gatwick. I think the fourth one is either opening or opening soon. So they do it so well. But the motorway sites they've got are big enough. It wasn't big. Oh, and I parked next to my first Volvo EX30. So I didn't get to drive it, but I spoke to the new owner extensively. He's from Scotland and was doing a trip all the way down the country, from Scotland to the southwest.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That would be like... I don't know how many miles.
10 miles.
And it's the X30 is much smaller than I thought.
Yes, it's a small car.
Yeah, right.
Really small. He loved it. He says it's great. The software is trash.
Yeah, ooh. I've seen this from Bjorn's videos too.
And he said, "I'm a Volvo fan. I love the car. It looks great. Interior fantastic. Done really well. Not a button or a switch to be seen. It's all on the screen." And he said, It just won't work. He got in the car that morning and had to drive for 20 minutes of the screen doing like rainbow colors and just swiping down and like flashing. And he went, after 20 miles, the screen just came on. But until then, I couldn't tell what my speed was. And it's like, he said he knows that they'll fix it eventually. But
does he know that?
Because it's Volvo and it's Geely, and he says that they'll fix it. But it reminds me of early Tesla owners of like, yeah, this is all broken, but I know they'll fix it. He still loved the vehicle, but he said that the software is genuinely garbage. And I thought, ooh, that's going to sting a little bit for whoever worked on that at Volvo. So hopefully version 1.2 of that coming soon. But I loved the vehicle. Loved it. Very small boot. Reminded me of the Kona, the second spec. So with the facelift, but not the new bigger one. Reminded me of that. So a small car, but really nice. Loved it. Really lovely.
Right. Better looking, I think, than the Hyundai Kona, really.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. But lots of bits inside it that reminded me of just Volvo stuff. So, which is
everything's well thought out, but they like also carve out as much of the door cards as possible. They don't put speakers in them to give you as much usable space, and then it's just got the sound bar up front. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. So last week we didn't have a battery bargains episode for you. We had an interview with the gentleman from Archer Aviation, which is one of the new eVTOL vertical takeoff and landing electric aircraft that are up and coming. And I expect to have two more short interviews with two other leaders in that industry coming up this week. But hopefully we'll do a battery bargains. I haven't talked to the team yet, so I'm just like sharing this with everybody. So that's coming up this week. So yeah, with me away, things are a little bit up in the air the last week and a half. My apologies. We'll be back together again, and I'm hopefully upgrading my studio here too. That's my weekend project. So stay tuned for that. But I think for now, that brings us to the end of our show. I ask that as a question because I don't know if anyone has anything else that they want to say real quick. Okay. Have any questions, go ahead, Tom.
No, I said, I think that's about it.
Okay.
So I will say I have a video coming out tomorrow on, I did an in-depth comparison with the Lightning and the Cybertruck when I had it, and 15 different categories side by side comparing the two. That should be coming up tomorrow on State of Charge. So keep an eye out for it.
Over 1,000 people watch the live stream at times today. Thank you very, very much for helping us build the channel. Thank you.
True. Hit that like button. Press that bell icon for notifications so you don't miss these upcoming episodes. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Give us a thumbs up, and thank you all again for joining us. We'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.